Welcome back, everyone. It's time for an earnings week preview, and this is for week three of earnings. This is the last really big earnings. We've made it through week one and two. The market's held up, but we have a couple big names this week, in particular, Amazon and Apple. Those are two big ones. I own both of them, so I'm going to be going over and doing a bit of analysis on each of these companies. Now, as we look through this week ahead, we have a whole list of companies here. I scanned through them and I circled the ones that we're going to be going over in this video. These are the ones that I believe are the most notable, the most interesting, or the most impactful. And we're going to be doing a little bit of an earnings preview on each of these companies. Now, to start off the week, we have SoFi. They just reported earnings this morning and they're up 15%. So a huge beat by SoFi. I'll be sharing some opinions on that stock in general. And then we have Tomorrow, a whole list of companies. We have the continued theme of the recovery in cruise lines with Norwegian Cruise Line. This is, I think, a pretty good cruise line, so we'll be looking at that. We have Uber. This is a company that I'm getting more interested in over time. And then after market close tomorrow, we have Starbucks, another food company, very similar to Chipotle, in my opinion. Then we move on to Wednesday. We have two big fintech companies, one of them being PayPal and the other one being Shopify. Now, a lot of people think that I'm wrong, that Shopify isn't really a fintech company. It's an online retailer. But I'm going to explain why I believe Shopify is a fintech company like PayPal as well. So we're going to be going over both of those companies. I'll be giving you my opinions on what's going to happen in their earnings. Then we move on to Thursday. Thursday is the big day. We have, before market opens, Warner Brothers Discovery. They're dealing with a ton of debt. They're dealing with a very difficult content slate. And they're dealing with the writer's strike along with Netflix and everyone else in the entertainment industry. So that's a very complicated, kind of messy company right now. After market close is where we really get into it, with Amazon and Apple reporting at the same time. I'm going to be spending the most time going over Amazon and Apple in this video, so we'll be looking at those two. And then we also have Airbnb. That's another company I find very intriguing. And then to close out the week, we have Nikola, a company that's infamous for rolling a truck down a hill and pretending that it was driving itself. We're going to be looking at Nikola's financials and doing a little bit of an update on their upcoming earnings as well. So we have a lot of stocks to cover in this video and a lot of analysis to get to. Let's go ahead and jump right in. We'll start off with SoFi. SoFi just reported their earnings this morning. And as we can see right here in Qualtrum, the stock is up 18.53% today. This is just today's return. So it's up nearly 20% today. SoFi investors are having a very good day today. Now on Qualtrum, we also have something where if there's any notable change in stock price, it informs you of what's going on. And Qualtrum says that SoFi Technologies shares are trading higher after the company reported better than expected Q2 financial results. It issued 2H adjusted net revenue guidance and raised the financial year 2023 adjusted net revenue guidance. So basically, they beat their current estimates and then they raised estimates for the rest of 2023. And that is precisely what investors are looking for. Investors are bidding up these companies year to date in hopes that they raise their guidance for the full year of 2023. But the reason that SoFi's stock is doing so well this year is the company's doing really well. Every core metric that they track, the amount of customers they have, the amount of loans they're giving out, the amount of financial services they're doing, all of that's moving in the right direction. We have their member count. This is the amount of customers going up per year. We see very strong growth with SoFi. Now, I've looked at SoFi. I find this company intriguing. I think it's one of the better fintechs in existence. In my opinion, between SoFi and Ally Financial, right now I probably like SoFi a little bit more. Because if you look at Ally as a competitor to SoFi, both of them are offering a lot of financial services, they're offering a lot of fintech banking-like products, but SoFi's doing it in a category that I think is less risky. Ally Financial, for example, has most of their loans based around used cars, which is a market that I don't want a ton of loan exposure in. SoFi, on the other hand, is highly diversified. A lot of it is student loans, a lot of it is mortgage, a lot of it is car loans, But overall, it's a bigger breadth of product that they're offering. So I like the diversification of this company a little bit more. So overall, I like the earnings report. I like the situation of SoFi. I like the loan diversification. I like that the company's headed in the right direction as well, fundamentally speaking. The big things I would be looking for at this company, continuing from here, is that free cash flow. When are they going to generate real free cash flows like the bigger, more mature banks? Now, moving on, tomorrow morning, we have Norwegian and Uber reporting their earnings before the bell. Let's go ahead and start off with the cruise line here, Norwegian Cruise Line. Now, this is in the category of company where I think you're better off enjoying their services and their product than you are investing in the stock. That's the case in some companies. You're just better off enjoying what they have to offer instead of putting your money behind them. In this case, I actually think Norwegian Cruise Line is a very fun company. I've only gone on two cruises. One was with Carnival, one was with Norwegian. And Norwegian was much, much better. The cruise ships are really fun. They're almost like amusement parks on top of the ship. They have courts and swimming pools and slides and rope courses. They have a plank that you can walk out the side of the boat over the edge of it. We were looking down at the water. I did that and it was incredibly frightening, but a fun thing to do. It's just a lot of fun. These are cruise liners that are made a little bit more modern and updated, and that's a fun part of it. What's not fun is finding yourself wrapped up in a cruise line stock because you bought in hoping to buy the dip. In some cases, that can pay off if you're able to time it correctly. For example, if you bought into Norwegian Cruise Line at the beginning of the year, you'd be up 83%, feeling very good right now. Even if you bought the company 1 year ago, you'd be doing okay. But if you bought it 5 years ago, over a longer time horizon, you're down 55%. If you bought it 10 years ago, you're down 28%. And then all time with this stock, back to 2013, you're still down 12%. So this is a stock where you have to time the ups and downs. You have to buy in on a dip, sell at the top. And historically, that's proven to be incredibly difficult for investors, near impossible to do consistently. So my thoughts are to avoid these type of stocks overall. When I look at Norwegian, we can look at the problems with this type of industry. The revenue has recovered, so we're back to all-time high revenues, and we're probably going to see all-time high revenues this quarter. But the revenue is not the only thing that matters. We look at the economics of the company. Since Norwegian had to take on so much debt during the COVID shutdown, the company literally doubled its long-term debt. It went from running around $5.7 billion in debt to now running $12 billion. So we have double the amount of debt, which means double the amount of interest payments. And this is long-term debt. Long-term debt needs to be refinanced eventually. So not only do they have double the debt they had previously, but the debt they now have is going to have to be refinanced at a higher price in the future. When those loans mature and the company has to refinance, that's not going to be a fun time for this company if interest rates are where they are today. This is why I try so hard to focus on companies that don't have much long-term debt exposure. And cruise lines have that. So what we see is a company that has a lot more debt, and it's going to be very difficult to get back to the same earnings per share they were at previously. Now, aside from their financial situation, I do expect this to be good earnings in terms of the expectations investors currently have. I expect a beat on the top.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
On bottom line, I can't say for sure, there's no guarantees, but I would be pretty surprised if they didn't, considering the demand that cruises have right now. Now, moving on, we have Uber. Uber is one that I've looked at for a long period of time. This company, the only thing wrong with it has been that it hasn't really made any money throughout its history. But a couple quarters ago, I believe around 3 quarters ago, the CEO of Uber said that their primary focus is becoming profitable, becoming free cash flow positive, focusing on the economics of the business. He basically made a huge pivot. He went from being a company that's focused on disruptive growth and market share and network effects to profitability, cash flow, and profitability. And when he said that, I really think he meant it. He really said that they're shifting the whole company towards profitability. So that's what we would expect to see this quarter, continued growth in their free cash flow and profits. If we look at the company so far, right now it's a $100 billion stock, so $100 billion market cap, and it has stock-based comp adjusted a negative free cash flow. So they're just in that inflection point of becoming economically positive. Uber is up 94% year to date. It trades at a $100 billion market cap. Investors have very high expectations for this company, and right now the company is a very risky one, to be invested in. If they do not hold up to their high expectations, this stock is going to trade down dramatically. If they give very poor or underwhelming guidance, the stock will trade down as well. They need to show accelerated, continued cash flow growth, great operating leverage, improvements in the margins and profitability. Otherwise, this stock is going to go down. So it's at one of those pivotal moments right now in the stock's transition to profitability. This was the same situation that Netflix had in their last quarter. Investors had very high expectations. The stock got bid up, but Netflix told investors they're going to make $5 billion in free cash flow this year. That's what kept the stock where it is. So these type of companies that are transitioning from growth to profitability, they have a really big task on their shoulders. They really have to prove their business model and prove the economics of it. And if they get it wrong, if for whatever reason they can't grow profitably, it'll be a bloodbath for these companies. In my opinion, I think Uber will be able to do it. I think that they'll be able to meet their guidance and they'll have good cash flows. Now, next up, we have a company that I really love, which is Starbucks, reporting earnings after market close on Tuesday. Let's go ahead and take a look at this one. I used to own Starbucks for a long period of time in my passive income portfolio. I think it's a great company that has good brand value, very high returns on capital employed. When they open up a new Starbucks location, they get it paid back very quickly, within 2 years, which is a great payback period. And then the company sold off because of concerns that I didn't think would really impact the business. The big scare with Starbucks just a year ago was the unionization. We had the New York Times writing about it. We had a bunch of articles saying how big and bad Starbucks is, how poorly they treat their employees, all of this stuff that was completely fictional. Starbucks is one of the best employers for the food service industry. They pay the best benefits. They're an incredibly good employer, but they become the target because they're a very big company. So that news to me was a great opportunity to buy into this company at a reduced price. It traded down to $70, now it's back up to $100, and I've since exited that position at a decent profit. That's my history with Starbucks, but I still keep this one on my watch list. If we get weakness in it, if we get a big sell-off in this one, I could very well re-enter the position. Now, when we look at Starbucks' upcoming earnings report, everyone's going to be focused on the top and bottom line, whether they beat or missed, and that's not what you should be focused on as an investor. Whether or not the earnings per share beats by 2 pennies or misses by 2 pennies is not a big impact on the overall story of the company. It's really not. So try not to focus too much on that. What I would focus on instead are the core drivers of the intrinsic value of the company, one of them being the app. The app is so important to the story of Starbucks. The more people that are using the app on a monthly basis, the more money this company is going to make. The app is incredibly crucial to the future of Starbucks. It makes it so that they can get the money that people upload to it, and they can use it as an interest-free loan to open up new restaurants. So they're getting super high returns with their new restaurants with money they're getting from an app for free. And then to fulfill on that extra revenue, the obligation from that money uploaded, they simply serve coffee, which is very inexpensive to make. So Starbucks really they've created something very magical with their rewards program. Now, the rewards program is so important. When I look at this, they currently have 30.8 million as of last quarter. This is the previous one. And I think that there's a chance that they get up another 2 million users. So we'll see, but I want to see growth with this app. When I was doing my analysis on Chipotle, and part of the reason that I bought into Chipotle and I sold out of Starbucks is because of the incredible digital property that Chipotle has. Chipotle has a fraction of the locations that Starbucks has, a complete fraction. They actually have around 10 times less. So Chipotle is way smaller than Starbucks in size and scale, but they have around as many people using their app, 30 million compared against $30.8 million. Right now they're tied, and I believe Chipotle is going to pass them up. People really, for whatever reason, love the Chipotle app, and Chipotle has been great at marketing this. So the fact that Chipotle, at the size it is, already has 30 million people using its app, I think is a huge positive thing for the company, encouraging more growth, encouraging more long-term customers. The next thing that I look at with Starbucks is the same-store sales of the company. Starbucks is already really big in the amount of restaurants they have, so same-store sales is very meaningful to the economics of the company. So I want to see strong same-store sales. I also want to see new expansion and see how things are going in China. Another reason that right now I felt a little bit more comfortable with Chipotle over Starbucks is simply because Starbucks is going headfirst into China. They're really making that their major growth path ahead. And I'd prefer for companies to have lots of ways to grow, including China, but not have that be their really only major growth path. But other than that, I believe that Starbucks is very well situated. They have a growing dividend. They're doing share buybacks. They have a balance sheet that's not as good as one like Chipotle. They do have a lot of debt. But it's not anything that's troublesome. Starbucks has ample liquidity. They're a company that has very, very good economics. So I'd expect to see maybe a 1% to 2% change in price after earnings. Now moving on, we get to Wednesday. We're halfway through the week and we have PayPal and Shopify both reporting earnings after market close. Let's go ahead and talk about PayPal here for a minute. PayPal, I think, is one of the more popular ones online right now. A lot of people are betting on this company. And I can see the thesis. I think it's very simple. PayPal has a low PE ratio, so not too much in terms of expectations. It has a high free cash flow yield, so they're generating a decent amount of cash, especially in today's market. And the company has been beat up, so it's a little bit of a recovery play as well. If we look over the past 5 years, PayPal was at $300 per share, and it's down dramatically, currently trading at, what is it now, $75 per share. So 300 to 75, low PE ratio, high free cash flow yield, I get it. It's a very simple thesis, and I don't blame anyone for investing in this company. When I look at PayPal overall as a business and its long-term growth trajectory, there's other bets in fintech that I like more. A lot of people believe that PayPal is like new tech, Visa and MasterCard are older tech and outdated, and I don't share that viewpoint anymore. I once did until I studied MasterCard and Visa, and I learned more about their business models. I think these companies are every bit as up-to-date, as technologically advanced as companies like PayPal. So when I look at them, I see no difference. Other than MasterCard and Visa have bigger moats, they have a wider network, and they have better financials. They run more efficiently. So I view MasterCard and Visa as companies that both are incredibly powerful. They operate in a very similar fashion as a huge network effect, but I think that they're at the same valuation and they offer better economics. In particular, if we look at the PayPal valuation, a 4% free cash flow yield, 4.5%, we can compare that to Visa. And Visa right now actually has a higher yield, meaning Visa on a free cash flow basis is selling for cheaper than PayPal. Here's another thing that I'd look at when comparing these different groups of companies. PayPal may beat on this earnings report. They might be able to do that, and maybe the stock will run up. But what I'm looking at is companies that can continually generate shareholder returns and growing shareholder returns. When we look at the free cash flow of PayPal, notice how ever since 2018, they've been unable to grow their free cash flow. It's really just stalled out. It's the same amount that it was all the way back in 2018. If we compare that to Visa or MasterCard, it paints a very different picture. Look at MasterCard's or Visa's free cash flow in 2018. Here it is in 2018 at $12 billion. Today, it's at $18 billion. So they're well on their way of doubling their free cash flow. They have it going up basically every single year. We can look at MasterCard's as well. MasterCard has even more linear growth in their free cash flow. In 2018, it was at $6 billion. Now it's at $10 billion. So they increased it by over 50%. Massive increases in free cash flow. And they're doing this without much stock-based comp or dilution in the process. The economics are simply superior. PayPal has stalled free cash flow growth while they have a bigger amount of dilution through stock-based compensation. Both of these are more unattractive trades. So if you're invested in PayPal, what you're expecting is continued growth. We have to see some growth in their free cash flow, because even if we look at it on a quarterly basis, it still looks like it's pretty flat over the past couple of years. And this is the problem I have with the story of PayPal. Why are they not growing in their economics? What is wrong in this company to make it so they have no operating leverage? They have no continually increasing margins. Where are they going wrong? Because when we look at the top line of the company has been growing. So that's my big question mark for this one. When I go into PayPal's earnings, I'm going to be looking at what are they doing in terms of transferring their revenue growth into continually high margins and more free cash flow growth. That is the big question for the investor. My thoughts on PayPal are right now, I think that there's low expectations into the stock. I think that it's likely to outperform this earnings, but longer term, there's still some big question marks with this story. Now, moving on, we also have Shopify that's reporting earnings at the same time as PayPal. And Shopify is, I just love this company. I really do. I think Shopify is a wonderful company. I think it's the best company to ever come out of Canada. And I don't say that lightly. Canada has some great railroads, they have some great banks, but Shopify is the first company to come out of Canada where I could really see this company becoming a $200, $300, $400 billion market cap company, something that Canada has been unable to accomplish before now. But they have a real treasure here, a real asset in Shopify. Now, we can look at the past of this company, and the share price has gone all over the place. In the past 5 years, it went up to $180 per share, around that price. Now it's back down to around $65, $70 per share. Right now it's at $67. So the share price has come down. We've had a lot of volatility. Shopify probably got up a little too high like most stocks, and it's trading back down to a better valuation. But if we ignore all of the price fluctuation, underneath all of that, I believe we have a very good company that will have very good future economics. The growth over the past 5 years has been 43% per year. That is incredible. Last year it was 16.4%. So it's slowing down a little bit as we would expect, but we still have a very fast top line growth. We look at this company, and a lot of people make the mistake when they haven't done a lot of analysis on Shopify to believe that this company is only online retail. But Shopify does a lot more than just online retail. They also have an apps business where they sell services, and they also are a fintech company. Similar to PayPal or any other fintech company like SoFi, Shopify is a fintech company. Shopify has products like Shopify Capital, where they give their merchants on their stores loans. And then the brilliant thing about the loans they give is they know how much money every single merchant's making, because it's on their store, their merchant. So they know how much transactions you're doing, how much revenue you're doing. They don't know the exact profitability of every item you sell, but they know your top line revenue because they're the ones that are servicing your store. Now, because they know how much revenue you make and how consistent it is, they can offer Shopify Capital loans, this product, to their merchants, and they do so based on a payback through the revenue of the company. So if I take out a Shopify loan, as a merchant, I pay it back by them taking a certain percentage of my revenue until the loan is paid back. So every transaction I do, they might take back 10% of those transactions until the loan is paid back. That's an incredibly brilliant strategy from Shopify. They simply hand out loans and take the money back through your revenue with every processed transaction on your website. And since they can do it that way, they don't need to go through banks or an underwriting process to give you the loan. So they save a huge amount of hassle and underwriting work to figure out your credibility. So they're bypassing a lot of administrative work, they're giving out loans quicker, and a lot of entrepreneurs use Shopify Capital over banks because of how hassle-free it is. You can either go to a bank, you can try to give them tons of information about your company's financials, you can go through and give all your credit scoring and everything with your company, and you try to get a loan at a certain interest rate. Or you can go to Shopify, you apply for a loan, and in one click, they'll say, here's your loan. Here's the interest rate, and here's the loan. No underwriting process, nothing, because they already have all the data. That is a really advantageous position for Shopify. So what they built out here is a nice little ecosystem for themselves. They have all these retailers using their website to sell all of their merchandise, and they're layering upon more and more services adjacent to online retail that they can make a lot of money from. So I really like the situation this company's in with all of the products they're offering. This quarter, I think, is going to be good. I think online retail has been strong. Consumers are still spending money. What I'd be worried about with Shopify is their forecast throughout the rest of the year. Because I think that so far, consumers have been strong, but I'm starting to get the sense that consumers are going to slow down a little bit throughout the rest of the year. They're going to tighten their belt, focus on their budget a little bit more. So I would be concerned going into this earnings more about future forecasts than I would this previous quarter report. Now moving on, later this week we get into Thursday. Before market open, we have Warner Brothers Discovery reporting their earnings. And this is a company that so far I've avoided because, first of all, the entertainment industry is very difficult. It's tough to make consistent money in this industry as an investor. We've seen the troubles that Disney's had. It's been just complex and difficult, and it's been overall a very difficult investment. I don't like my investments to be difficult. I like them to be easy, predictable, simple, non-complex. So complexity to me is not a good thing. Warner Brothers Discovery is in a complex situation. They have a ton of debt. They took on a lot of debt from the AT&T sell-off merger. So their debt went up almost 3 to 4 times. They have more cash flows now, but they also have been scrapping different series, trying to save money. Now we have the writer strike and the actor strike thrown in the mix. That's going to make things more expensive when they're trying to create content. They're going to be able to have a halt in the content creation. So this will actually make their free cash flow look better in the next quarter. But that's a very temporary thing. And that's not really a positive thing. People that are subscribing to these streaming services want new content. So the fact that it's going to be halted and the production will be frozen is not a good thing for these companies overall. In my opinion, when I look at Warner Brothers Discovery, I think the earnings will be okay this time because they're going to forecast higher free cash flow. Investors will probably like that. What I would look for in this earnings report is a continual debt pay down. They should be using their free cash flow to get this debt down as fast as possible because that is a threat to their long-term business. I do not like holding companies that have substantial amounts of long-term debt, and they usually don't have a great track record. So I want to see pay down in that. I want to see ample free cash flow growth. They got to get the free cash flow positive, and I would want to see forecasts of positive free cash flow. And then finally, with this company, I will be looking at how many Max subscribers they gain. The new streaming service from them is called Max. I want to see how that's doing. That is, I think, the most important thing to the future story of this company. Now, moving on to Thursday after market close, we get to the highly anticipated earnings of Amazon and Apple. That's going to be an exciting market close. Let's go ahead and talk about Amazon for a minute. I'm invested in the company, very bullish on its future, but Amazon, the stock, has been acting differently than Amazon, the company. For example, over the past 5 years, Amazon stock has been going every direction. It's had a huge run up, and then it's had a big sell-off, and then it's had another run up. Overall, it's only up 48%. So it hasn't been great over the past 5 years. Meanwhile, the company, the revenue has been growing. The Amazon Prime business has been growing. The advertising business has been growing. And AWS has been growing. Every core intrinsic value driver of the company has been growing. The big problem that I've highlighted many times with Amazon is that right now they've had an explosion in temporary one-time CapEx costs as they went through a reinvestment cycle. Many companies go through this. They outlay a bunch of money to reinvest in different warehouses, and then they should slow down on that reinvestment. The savings in CapEx when that reinvestment slows down should fuel further free cash flow growth. When we look at this, there's lots of things that you can look at with Amazon. We can study the free cash flow history and see how each quarter is doing. We can look at the amount of dilution they're doing in stock-based comp. We can look at the amount of CapEx they're doing and R&D they're doing. They have huge CapEx budget, and you can see the explosion there in 2020. There's all these different metrics we can look at, but the three biggest ones to me, the three biggest focuses, the intrinsic value drivers of this company, are first, AWS. Amazon's web service is a massive intrinsic value driver. As that grows, that company becomes worth more. Then we have ads. Ads is a fast-growing business from Amazon. They offer ads on their retail website, Amazon.com. If you go there, you'll see sponsored listings. And that's just like the end cap of a grocery store. Lots of companies will advertise and pay extra to be on that end cap. So Amazon does that in their online retail store. They also advertise on Twitch. They advertise on Amazon Prime Video. They advertise everywhere they can. So the ads portion is high margin, and it's a fast-growing portion of the business. And then finally, we get to Prime. Now, the Prime membership encompasses a lot of value propositions. There's the Amazon Music, there's photo upload, there's a lot of different things they throw in there. But overall, the Prime membership, I believe, is a big intrinsic value driver of the company. The more Prime subscribers they have, the lower churn it is, the better off Amazon is intrinsically. So these are the big things that I'd look at. How is AWS doing? How is the ads business doing? And how is overall the Prime business doing? A big driver of these additional businesses is the retail business as well. And Amazon is always improving the retail business. Amazon says it's delivering more packages in one day or less after overhauling their delivery network. So we're seeing the returns on this investment for the customer. They invested heavily in overhauling their delivery network. Now customers are getting their packages in one day. That is a big moat between Amazon and other retailers like Shein or Temu that take 1 to 3 weeks to get your package. So what I'm going to be focused on this Thursday, looking at Amazon's earnings report, is looking at these three things mainly: the AWS, the ads, and the Prime business. I want to see how all of their companies are doing, but these are the three biggest metrics to me. The other thing that most investors will be focused on, it's going to be this. It's going to be AI. Is Amazon focused on AI, or is Microsoft winning, or is Google winning? In my opinion, AI has become too much of a buzzword right now. Of course, Amazon is focused on AI. They use it in virtually every part of their company. They use it in their recommendations of what type of ads you get. They use it in the recommendations of what type of products you get when you visit their page. It drives all their algorithms. It drives the Prime homepage. They use it in AWS as well for numerous products. So Amazon has been using artificial intelligence for a long period of time, recommendation algorithms and different forms of it. So they're not only using AI, but they're also building tools to enable other people to use AI. That's just not something I'm very concerned with. So as most investors focus on this, I'm going to be firmly focused on this. Overall, my thesis on Amazon is that they can show some real operating leverage and real margin improvement by winding down on their CapEx investment. They already expanded their delivery network. They don't need to do as many new investments as they did before, so we should see some real operating leverage from those investments. But it is a bit riskier of a play. Amazon is always more unpredictable. You can't determine whether or not it's going to be up 10% or under 10%. So it's not a company that I'd ever make any bets on the immediate earnings. Next up, we have Apple. This one's very simple. I've owned Apple for a long period of time. My prediction is that they beat on the top and bottom line. They post good earnings. I think they will be reluctant to give any type of substantial guidance, as Apple usually does not. But I think the company is going to post very strong earnings, as they usually predictably do. Apple is a company that, as far as I'm concerned, it's business as usual. The moat is as wide as it's ever been. The company is in a strong position as it's ever been before, because investors continually underappreciate the moat that Apple has, the ecosystem they have, and the economics they can generate from that ecosystem. I remember talks of Apple being expensive nearly 5 years ago, and since then the company has grown its free cash flow per share at 23%. Substantial growth in the amount of cash flow they generate. Nothing, in my opinion, makes me believe that the moat has gotten weaker for Apple. In terms of future outlook and product development, again, I think it's business as usual for Apple. They're going to iterate on their current product line. They're going to continually improve it incrementally year over year and give enough goodies, just enough little improvements that you kind of want to get the new iPhone. You have yours and you're looking at the features of the new one and you're thinking, I spent so much time on my iPhone, I kind of want to get that new one. In this case, they're doing a lot to advance towards the perfect phone, what Apple believes is the perfect phone. Let's go ahead and just take a look at a couple of the improvements they're doing. For starters, Apple designers have long dreamed of an iPhone that is truly all screen, with no borders around the display, no cutouts and cameras or sensors. With the iPhone 15 this fall, Apple will take another step towards that goal. The standard iPhone 15 models will trade in the notch for the dynamic island, while the Pro and Pro Max displays will be made with new technology, low injection pressure overmolding, or LiPo, as it's dubbed inside Apple. That new process will shrink the border size around the display to 1.5 millimeters from about 2.2 millimeters in the current iPhones. That's a dramatic improvement, from 2.2 to 1.5. We're working with small amounts here, but that's a pretty dramatic improvement. Now, they say that LiPo was first used in Apple Series Watch 7 to make the device borders thinner and increase the size of the display. and Apple plans to eventually bring the feature to the iPad as well. So we have the rumors here that Apple is basically working on making the screen fill out more of the actual device, making it seem like there's no bezel at all, from one side to the other, screen to screen. Think about the situation that competitors to Apple are in. Are they supposed to create a better phone that has lesser bezels? How would they even do that? All the best engineers are working at Apple. And then on top of that, how are they supposed to compete with the huge ecosystem that Apple has? I still think Apple's in such a good position. And whether or not the earnings come in a little bit lower than expected or a little bit higher than expected, in my opinion, that's very short-term stuff. I wouldn't be too concerned on it. I do think they'll be on the top and bottom line, but I also think the long-term story for Apple's very well intact, and I see incredibly good profit growth in this company. Now, we also have Airbnb reporting earnings on Thursday after market close. This is a company I've been following for a while. I like the business model of it because it's asset light. It has a very organic growth product. It just grows based on social media and more people using it. They have a great balance sheet. They have a lot more cash than debt. You know how much I don't like long-term debt. And the company has been taking efforts to move towards profitability. So we can see free cash flow going up as well, way above stock-based comp. I really like the fundamentals. I like the direction of the company. I do think that there's a good chance that Airbnb will struggle over the next 6 months. When I look at the housing market and house prices, when I look at the amount of active listings and different people that are now going on vacation looking for places in Airbnb as opposed to a year ago, I think there's been a general decline. I don't know for sure. I'm not an expert in these markets, but I would believe that Airbnb is going to struggle over the next 6 months. So I would be concerned going into this earnings report about their forecast. Maybe they can surprise to the upside, but for me, I'm a little bit iffy on this one. And then finally, Friday market close, we have none other than Nikola. The last time I really covered Nikola as a company was when they showed a phony marketing video of one of their trucks driving, but really it was just rolling. They took it to a small grade hill and they rolled it down the hill and they filmed it like it was driving itself. It was a big marketing scheme. They used specific language to try to trick people. And now the CEO is being charged with fraud. So he's probably going to get some jail time as well. Nikola has changed. The leadership has changed to some extent. But I still believe this company offers no value to investors, and I think there's a good chance it will go bankrupt. When I look at the financials of Nikola, there's no real ratios you have to look at. You just need to look at the fundamentals and understand how this is going. The revenue is iffy, but that's not the most important thing here. We have EBITDA that's continually in the red. The free cash flow is going negative every single quarter at an aggressive rate. The net income is always negative, and the earnings per share are negative as well. Now, while that's going on, you can see the trends in their cash balance as well. Just a simple glance at it shows that the cash on hand is going down and the amount of debt is going up. And we hit a critical point here, a critical point where the cash actually went below the amount of long-term debt. So now they are a net zero cash company that has more long-term debt than they do cash. When I see this trend happen with an unprofitable company, and I see the amount of shares being diluted because they need to raise more cash to run the business, this puts an enormous amount of pressure on future profitability. So Nikola better start posting profitable quarters right away. This quarter, next quarter, and they better forecast future profitability to stay in business. Otherwise, investors aren't going to give them new capital via share issuance, and the debt markets are going to be very reluctant as well. My prediction is right now that within 1 year, Nikola will have filed for bankruptcy. So we'll see if that happens. We'll look back in a year and see if this company's still currently in business. But that is a busy week ahead. We have a lot of earnings reports to go over. If you're interested in following up on this content, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell icon. You can follow me on my other YouTube channel as well. I cover a lot of earnings reports on that one. But that's all for now. See you in the next one.